Jayama Sadhuno Bhante Bhagava Suchira Parinipotoki Pashima Janata Nukampa Manasa Ime Sakare Dukata Panakara Bhute Patigan Hatu Amhakangi Haratak Hitaya Sukaya Alahang Samasambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivade Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammāsambuddhassa Itipiso Bhagava Arahaṃ Sammāsambuddho Vicca-caraṇa-sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purissa Dhamma Sarati Sata Deva Manusanam Buddho Bhagava Tamahang Bhagavantam Abhipujayami Tamahang Bhagavantam Sivasanamani Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sandhitiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditapo Vinyuhi Tamahang Dhammang Abhipujayami Tamahang Dhammang Sirasanamami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ujjupatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Hiyaya Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Samichi Patipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Yadidam Chattari Purisa Yugani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaniyo Anuttaram Punyaketa Lokasa Tamahang Sangha Abhipujayam Sammi, Tamahang Sangam, Silasadamami.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep, sure. See if the water disappears.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. May be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
He he he. Ho ho ho. Hey, ha ha ha. Oh, I thought there was no. Very good. Oh, I've got to put my necklace on. My noose. Humperdoo. Okay. If the nuns are sitting comfortably, then I shall begin. Here we go. Dear Ajahn Brahm, I'm actually very dear, because remember once I was going to give it's in a conference. It was in Docklands in London. It was a big HR conference. And they paid my airfare all the way over to London, nice hotel, and I was going to give a presentation or a keynote. And I was about to just, you know, getting ready, and then the organizer said, there's a couple of people trying to get in for free, claim to be your relations. I didn't know. I obviously got relations in England. I didn't know that sort of they were going to come. They never told me. And so I went to the checkout. It was my brother and his daughter, my niece. And I said, oh, you know, just, you know, this is my brother, my relations. You know, can he come and I sweet talk to them? I come all this way for you. Can you let them come in? So I said, okay, you can come in for free. And as soon as they came in for me, I scolded my brother. Look, you cheapskate. You know, you're a banker. And, you know, my niece, she had a good job. You know, why are you trying to get in for free? And that's when they told me, he said, do you know how much they wanted to charge each one of us to come to your talk? £300 sterling each. Whoa. Each, no, not just together. £300 sterling each. And I thought, wow, now I know my market rate. So don't call me dear Ajahn Brahm, call me expensive Ajahn Brahm. It's really weird, I don't know why they do those things. Anyway, if I am correct, in the Eightfold Path, Samma Samadhi is the four jhanas and Sammasati is the four Satipatthanas. Yes. You mentioned the mind is more important than the body, and that's the reason jhanas are important, but in the four satipatthanas, the first satipatthana is the body. Could you explain why the meditation about the body is in the Eightfold Path? That means we need to practice to attain enlightenment, isn't it? Of course you need to practice. So it means you start off with the body. So in the first satipatthana, first of all, you can't isolate just the satipatthana. What's before the satipatthana? First of all, the right view. The second, the right motivation. Sometimes people call it right thought. Thought? That gets you into big trouble. And even for those who just quote the suttas, the Buddha even said, like thought, how the Buddha simile was, he said it's like a young man, a young woman, like someone like me. Well, okay. Who goes out at night, all dressed up, you know, well-groomed, best clothes, and then when they go out, they find that, I don't know how it got on there, there's a garland of dead dog carcasses around their neck. And they'd be disgusted, they'd be upset, ashamed. He said, and that simile, the well-groomed body is like the mind. And the carcass of dead dogs is thoughts. Ooh, that was actually quite a strong simile. So right thought. And that's one of the things about thoughts, they're all old stuff. If you look at your thoughts, it's all about sort of how you've learned, how you've interpreted from the past. It's not new stuff. That's why, you know, real insights, things which shock you, are just really are new ways of looking at things, not old stuff. So most of your thoughts are about the carcasses of old experiences which you're carrying around your beautiful mind. So that's, whew. So instead of right thought, right motivations, where you're coming from, letting go, kindness, gentleness. And that's beautiful. Once you get the right thought, you know, we're in this not to gain things. It's not spiritual materialism. No self. Just, oh, actually, that was that? Somebody just gave me a news flash about Donald Trump has now become a Buddhist. once he realized that the self, the ego, is fake news. Okay, somebody appreciated that. No fake news, not true. Okay, anyway, never mind. We do try. And anyway, so that's in the right view, that there's nothing to hold on to, nothing to attach to, nothing to do the attaching. So anyway, we go there, I'm sure, later on in this retreat. But it's just, once you have the purpose, it's to let go, not to gain things, to disappear, not to have just more spiritual attainments to brag about in front of your friends. Say, oh, how did you go on this retreat? So, wow, he said, I got nimittas. Ah, nimittas, I got those the first day, come on. Nimittas, wow, I got jhanas. Which one? Third, ah, that's easy. I got four jhanas. What psychic powers have you got? Spiritual materialism. Okay, there were these three, let's make it, okay, there were these four women, middle-aged women, well, actually quite elderly women, and they were having a cup of coffee in Melbourne. And they were just, one of them says, okay, I'm paying for the coffee, so I'm celebrating. Says, today my eldest son, he was ordained as a Catholic priest. And so now, and I'm so proud of him, everybody, they always bow their head and they call him father. So proud of my son. And the other next woman there, that's nothing. My son became a priest a long time ago. Now he's a bishop. When he comes into a room, people go on one knee and they kiss his ring. And they call him, what is it, your grace? And the third was, nothing, that's ordinary. My son, he's been a priest, a bishop a long time, he's now a cardinal. They go down on both knees, and they call him your eminence. And the fourth girl, woman, she kept quiet until she finished her coffee. She said, that's nothing. That's nothing. My son is the captain of, let's make it, Collingwood football team, who just won the grand final in Melbourne. He's tall, he's blonde, he's strong and really rich. When he comes into a room, all the women fall on the floor and say, oh my God, my God. Okay. That's more than your evidence. Anyway, so that's, you know, football or basketball or baseball or whatever, I don't know what. But anyway, you get the idea. Anyway, so it's not spiritual materialism, it's just the, see how much you can let go. So then you got all them. Once you get thoughts of letting go and kindness and gentleness, all the precepts that come into line. No, right speech, right action, right livelihood, of course, if you're letting go and kind and gentle, they just fall into line automatically. And from that, the right vayama, samapadana, it's all about, if you have a look, it's all about renouncing, letting go, restraining the, not the will, but the won't, the free won't to stop, restrain. And then from there, that weakens your five hindrances. Sometimes when we look at this in the gradual training, it's like restraint, sense restraint. Calming, that's the next stage after the precepts. That's actually where the samavayama just is balanced by the sense restraints. So you live simply. You know, you just, you know, go into quiet places, not Bunbury Beach, on the sort of the day after the, or the afternoon after the end of the year exams. And so you restrain yourselves, which means that your five hindrances get so subdued. And that's the first part of the all the satipatthanas. Vivicehi kam. No, that's not. That's the jhana. Sorry. Loke api vinaye loke api cha domanasan. That sometimes you read that the translation was the usual translation, having abandoned grief and covetousness for the world, which doesn't mean much at all. But if you look at the translation, even look at the commentaries trying to explain this, it always says that is code for having abandoned the five hindrances. It's restrained them, subdued them, until there's hardly anything left there. And that's why after you do that, then you can really understand your body, what it is, what caused it, where it comes from. You can start to understand this thing called experience, sometimes people call feelings, a mind and a mind objects. If you look at that, that's the first thing you have to do in Satipatthana. Restrain, almost abandon, just really keep in check your five hindrances, which stop you being wise, which distort what you see. You don't see what you want, you really is there, you see what you want to see. So because of that, that's the seventh factor of the Eightfold Path, and based on that, that's where we can let go of our body. We understand our body, we see its cause and effects, which means we can let it go. And when it goes, that becomes the jhanas. Why is it you can't let go of the body? We're afraid, because this is our comfort zone. We have an experience not being away from our body. And that fear which comes up, which some of you have got to, that's the same type of fear, the best simile, of a person who's been in prison for 30, 40, 50 years. And tomorrow, you've got parole. You're going to be free from prison. Your sentence is over. Do you want to go? Even though I know prison is suffering, I've got used to prison, so I don't want to go. The even more coarse simile, the worm in the pile of cow poo. Well, come on, which is better, cow poo or no beautiful freedom in heaven or even jhana growth? But sometimes people, they don't want to come here. They'd rather be in their nice, warm, fragrant cow poo. So that's the trouble, that those five hindrances, they sort of stop us letting go of our body and being free. The doors are open, but we don't go through. We'd rather stay in our comfort zone. At least we know it, even though it perpetuates suffering. So that's samasati, that's how those things work. About the body is the Eightfold Path. Is on the Eightfold Path? Yeah, of course it's on the Eightfold Path, because we have to understand the body before we can let go of it. Next question. What is the basis of compassion? What is the basis for caring for the moment? The basis for compassion? The basis for compassion is the reduction of the sense of ego and self. So when I'm not concerned so much about myself, then my door of my heart's more open to others. So that's one of the basis of compassion. It's basically common sense, because we're in it together. The basis of compassion. Remember that story in Open the Door of Your Heart of those two families on a boat going from Perth to Vancouver. And years ago, instead of getting on an aircraft, there are two young families without kids, a journey of a lifetime, sail on a boat through the north of Australia, Pacific Islands, eventually to Vancouver. Great idea, because then they could sell the boat and they get a return on their money. And they had the time. They've been working in a mining contract up here in the north of Western Australia. And they were really nice friends, disciples. And when they got to Vancouver, they told me this story. They said, you must be able to use this. And I've used this so many times. In the middle of the Pacific Ocean, their yacht had engine trouble. The engine just wouldn't work. So in those days, it was the guy's job to fix the engine. So they were down in the engine compartment trying to fix this, trying to fix that. And I don't know if two guys in a cramped compartment, hot, and the engine didn't want to be fixed, they started getting irritated at one another. And after irritation, they started to say really bad words about each other. They really started getting angry at one another. And as soon they got so mad at one another, they were shouting and screaming and swearing at one another. And one of them took the wrench they were holding, threw it on the floor. Right, that's it. I'm leaving. And they were so mad and with anger. When you're angry, you don't know what you're doing. You really are crazy. It is what we call temporary insanity in Buddhism. And so angry, he actually went, according to to what I was told, he went to his room, cabin, whatever you call it, and washed, changed, packed his bags, and he was on the deck carrying his suitcases. A good old Janice who told me this, she wrote and said, she was one of the girls on the deck. They were just, they had nothing to do. They were just reading magazines. And they almost fell off the boat laughing. He looked around. It was Pacific Ocean in every direction as far as you could see. There was no sort of radio contact in this. It was a long time ago, before, you know, you had sort of satellite phones or navigational stuff. They were just in the middle of there, just no contact with the whole world. That's one of the nice things about it, but there's ocean as far as you can see in every direction. And so, what did he do? He got red in the face with embarrassment, turned around, didn't say anything, but went back into his cabin, just changed into his work gear, went back into the engine room and helped to fix up the problem. He said, what a wonderful metaphor that is for our modern world. There's no place to go. You may think, right, that's it, I'm leaving, I'm out of here. Where are you going to go? What planet are you going to go to? That's why this planet Earth is like a little boat floating through the ocean. You might think, right, that's it, I'm out of here. But no, you have to stop and work together. So that's one of the reasons why this is crazy. The purpose, the basis of compassion, you might even call it self-interest. Because 5 fingers of the hand. If one of these fingers gets cut and infected, I can't use the whole hand. Every finger has to look after each other. It doesn't matter which one there is. Big finger, little finger, they all have to work together. If one finger infected, can't use the whole lot. Compassion is common sense. What is the basis for caring for this moment? Now is the only time you can do anything. And your future is made now. So if you're caring for this moment, giving this moment importance, it's the only time you can ever do anything. Now. So caring for this moment, first of all, it means you're putting your attention on this moment, the only time you can do anything, the place your future is being made. And also, this is your history too. This is history in the making, now. And you will soon find that if you care for this moment, all your wonderful memories of just being here. Isn't that wonderful? All the nice memories of all these terrible jokes, all the sadhu, 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 and hee hee hee. You're making actually happy memories. You look back upon this silly retreat, and these are the things you remember, as well as the jhanas and the brilliant bliss and war. They're actually connected. So anyway, that you're making your history right now. And also, this is the only time you can make your future as well. So the moment is the only time you really have. So of course you have to care for it. Otherwise, missed opportunity. Dear your peaceful, kind and gentleness, is that all? Now, I often mention that if you're humble, now, monks and nuns, you're supposed to be humble. Are you humble? If you're, what's the point of being humble if no one knows about it? After all that work, training yourself to be humble, all those years. So if you are humble, please flaunt it. That's the purpose of humility, to let people know how humble you are. Anyway, I'm only joking. I've heard some very exciting news about the possibility of a Bodhinyana branch monastery being established in Albany. Oh, it's all fake news, according to Donald Trump. How has this come about? Would it have the same setup as Bodhinyana Serpentine, for example? Number of monks' kutis, meditational, dining hall, male, female, guest accommodation. Will local and overseas visitors be able to come and stay as guests, just like Serpentine Monastery? A big project like this will cost quite a lot. Oh, I think I know who wrote this. If the BSWA doing fundraising, do you already have a property? How can we donate to help finance it? Is development and construction? I know this is a lot of questions, but I'm happy to hear these teachings will soon be available to Albanians. That's what people from Albania, that's what they're called. Albanians. It's a multi... there's also Danish people down there, because Denmark is down there. So, yeah, we are getting it started because we've got lots of nuns, and sometimes, oh, can we have a few more nuns' monasteries? We've got a few of those. We've got nuns' monastery started in England, and we got a monks' monastery. Actually, we haven't got that many monks' monasteries, except the dual monastery in Victoria, NBM. And you know what NBM means? What it stands for? Nuns, Buddhists, and monks. That's what it means. Nuns, Buddhists, and monks. NBM. Haven't heard that before. I just make it up as I go along. That's Newbie Buddhist Monastery in South Victoria. Anyway, so there's a dual sangha there. So anyway, this is trying to find... There's lots of people over in Albany who just want this to happen. So we decided to give it everything we've got. When I do things, we do everything we've got. So, of course, it costs quite a lot, but most of what it costs is headaches. So if you can't have any money to donate to the Albany Monastery Project, please donate some Panadols and aspirins to all the people working hard down there. Because, you know, the hardest thing is just getting permission to do things from councils and from fire regulations. And, oh, it's just really, really tough. And also just looking after the environment down there. You know what I'd really love to do there, because it's limestone. I want to go dig down and have caves, underground places. Wouldn't that be really, it would be cool in many ways. But anyway, we've just got to go through the existing stuff at the moment. So yeah, if anybody wants to offer some funds for that, it's, I don't know how much it's going to cost. But anyway, we probably sort of end up doing it. And we extend all the monks to working in the restaurants, washing dishes. Make funds over there. Well, look, you know, your monks and nuns here, yeah, we work really hard. You know, we don't just sit there and just and eat. Well, we don't sit there and eat a lot. We work hard. And I always mention about this place, and oh, some of the things which I've done working in this place is crazy stuff. And fortunately, there was no photographs taken at those times. Have you been to Bodhinyana Main Hall? The hall there. Actually, I should have mentioned time ago, if you want to have some nice meditation, just walking over there, it's only about 15, 20 minutes to walk over there. And you're most welcome to meditate in the main meditation hall over there. And that is really powerful. It's a great place to meditate. There's a Feng Shui master came some years ago. I was away somewhere. And the Feng Shui master went in there and he said, wow, this is incredible, powerful feng shui in this hall, especially right to the front. Some great monks and nuns have meditated in that hall. And there's some really neat relics of the Buddha in the front. And it's really powerful. Ooh. So this was a feng shui master who didn't know what we were up to. And he came in the front of the hall, really powerful. And many people that go there, and they do get really good meditation. So how long has it been there now? 30, 35, no, I've been here 35 years, about 30 years or so. So it's really got a lot of good energy in there. So you can, if you want to go down there, and this is what we're trying to do down in Albany, trying to spread out a little bit so that we can, because we've got, you know, it's hard to find places for monks. We had our Katina ceremony here, and this is the only place we can hold a big ceremony, is this hall's big enough. And I had to ask many of the monks, look, please, you know, don't even think about sitting up here. You can come in the back, they join in the arms round and go back to the monastery, because we can't fit everybody in. So because of that, that's why we need to get some more monasteries. So if anyone wants to try that, but unfortunately you can't get the tax relief, because our government is always cracking down on sort of, we only got it through school building funds. And that was totally allowed, but now they're saying, oh, you're not really a school. You know, you don't send people into the corner when they're naughty. Maybe I should. No, don't do stuff like that. So it's just the whole government, we're trying to sort of get some way of being able to, you know, we do lots of good work, we are charities, and so some way that some people to encourage donations, so that if they do give a donation, they can get the tax credit for it. Right? In England, you know, because I'm trying to build the nuns' monastery in England, that we have, I have to be one of the trustees over there, it's about six trustees, and there that. So all I really do there is to make sure it gives it some credibility, put my reputation on the line there as a good monk who delivers, and so that makes sure that you know, that people trust it. And so anyway, that there, that every donation there, you know, it's a charity, even if it's for the electricity, it all gets you get a tax credit for that if you pay tax in the UK. Not here. So anyway, that it's one of the other headaches. That's why. If you can't afford a donation, give some aspirin or something. I don't need that, I'm fine. But anyway, so I think there is, anyone wants to make some merit fundraising. So it expands our, what I call in Asia, our monk factories and our nun factories, to churn out from the conveyor belt of Dharmasara. You get sort of new material coming in on one end, you churn it out and you get these great nuns coming out the other end. The same as Bodhinyana, you get the raw material, all these anagarikas. Actually, there's no anagarika, where the heck are they? Anyway, you churn them around and then they sort of get these great sort of monks at the end afterwards. And, wow, so it's actually, you know, it's an investment. So anyway, so I think if anyone wants to do that, that I think there's details over by the donation box somewhere. Okay, dear Ajahn, one is fully relaxed, has good samadhi. How does one go deeper? What do you fix your attention on? Do you fix your attention on anything? Whatever's right in front of you is the most important thing in the world. Remember that? Empathy question meditation? That's really brilliant. If this is right in front of me, that's the most important thing in the world. It's in this moment, it's the only thing I have. If I think, nah, this is good, not good enough, it's only a piece of paper, I want a nimitta, I want a jhana, I want a psychic power. That's all wanting, it's in the future, it's not real, it's not in front of you. What are you aware of right now? That's what you pay attention on. That's the most important meditation object in the whole world. It's happening now. And I say, that's mindfulness. Mindfulness is not being aware of, oh, where you're going to go later on this evening, or, you know, the nimitta you had just earlier on this afternoon. Nimitta is present right now. Mindfulness is present right now. You're giving this importance. Because sometimes something happens, something you're aware of, you think, oh, no, this can't be right. And you throw it away. If it's happening now, it's important. And it's beautiful caring for it. Opening the door of your heart to this moment, being with it, respecting it, not stigmatizing it because you think, oh, this is sloth and toil, this is restlessness, this can't be right. If it's happening now, care for it, value it, give it importance. And then it stays with you and it reveals amazing insights and great deep happiness and bliss. So if you're fully relaxed, how does one go deeper? One doesn't go deeper. This moment just unfolds and draws you in deeper and deeper and deeper. You don't fix your attention, the attention draws you. Whenever you see something really beautiful, you don't have to do it. If you're watching a movie, do you have to fix your attention on the screen? I must focus on the screen, I must focus. Of course, it's a natural thing. If it's enjoyable, you're getting delight in it. And I mentioned this morning where that delight comes from. It just draws you in. You can't resist it. Do you think that the Bhikkhuni Sangha won't be as supported once you're no longer around? I will always be a round monk. That's my shape. I think the first time that, there's Ayahasapati, we were in town doing some ceremony, I think, for the Buddhist Council of Western Australia, and she asked me, are you going to be around next week? And I said, I'm around every day. That's my shape. But yeah, no, of course there'll be bhikkhunis. So bhikkhunis are so well treated. Thank you for being a monk of integrity. But when you're gone, we may be back to monks scared to speak up until they're 40 vassas, back to institutions, etc., instead of kindness, dhamma, and non-discrimination. What should be done? First of all, why are nuns discriminated? Because of chanting, that's why. Whatever living beings there may be, omitting nuns. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. So every now and again we change the chant. Whatever living beings they may be, omitting monks. No, it's just, it takes a while. But you get some great nuns coming through. So I must admit, they are a bit thin. You get some gravitas. But anyway, yeah, but nuns, they will be supported. It's really impressive. Do you know the ordination of the four nuns, the four first bhikkhunis, what caused all the trouble? When did it happen? In what year? 2009. October, is it 22nd or 23rd? One of those two, 22nd. We have the 10th anniversary this year. You should celebrate something there. 10 years, the first ordination. And at first we thought, is it going to happen? Give it a try, and it works. It's a beautiful monastery. If you haven't been there yet, you should go. Amazing. Dear Ajahn, do prayers work? Of course they work. Before we bought that place for Dhammasara Monastery, I went up there an hour, it's an auction. So I went up there an hour before the auction with Ajahn Chittamala. Chittamala, that's Chittapala's brother. I went up there. We went to the center of the place, and for 1 hour, we did some really heavy chanting. We gave it everything we got, full power chanting. And it worked. Got the monastery. Only just. Really exciting. Because it was auction. And we didn't have much funds. So we counted our treasure was there. How much we got? How much can we afford on auction? And we added a bit here, added a bit there. What we can borrow from the monks' wives, what we can borrow somewhere else, what we can borrow from interest-free loans, and we added all that. Well, certainly no more than 600,000 was going to really stretch us for that property. But that was our limit. We decided, you know, have to have duty of care and just all this sort of stuff and due diligence, sorry. So we decided we can go up to 600,000. So there we were at the auction. We didn't know who our competitors were. So they started the auction. 400,000. 425,000, said. 450, do I hear 475? 475, do I hear 500? 525, do I hear 550? 575? You know, in auctions, they start off nice and slowly. And then they start to build up the pitch of their voice and the speed. So you get all excited and people just put their hands up because they're excited, they can't afford it. That's what they do. So anyway, we had our representative and he was waiting. He knew 600,000 was our limit. So someone bid 575. He put his hand up, 600. And that's when I started. Please, may everybody's mouth freeze. May their tongues not work. May it. And when I was trying to get the devas to keep everybody silent, 625, this gentleman put up. So close, but we lost it. 625, because we couldn't afford any more. And then this scallywag called Eddie Fernando. He was our bidder. 650, he put his hand up. We can't afford that. You've got no permission to do that, said our treasurer at the time. And the treasurer, I almost had to hold him. He was going to sort of lynch this guy. Yeah, leave it alone. Have some faith and confidence. And the treasurer, he was really angry and upset. He's got no permission. He can't do this. This is wrong. Oh, leave him alone. And that was the final bid, 650. And of course we could find the money somewhere. We didn't have to rob a bank because it was inspiring. It was amazing. And so it passed in at 650, we bought it for that. Had no money to do anything, but it was a start. And I remember just going to, I think it was a Saturday. Oh no, yeah. I forget, man. But the next Friday night, going to Nolamara and making the announcement, I said, I'm pleased to announce that we bid for this beautiful piece of land, and our bid got the property. We now have land for a nun's monastery. And people just burst out in applause. They wanted it to happen. It did happen. So sometimes that, you know, I don't know, but I would never get away with this in business. But with faith and confidence, inspiration. Ooh. If something is inspiring, it will happen. So, that's how we've worked all this time. In debt, sort of working my butt off, doing the work myself. Just in the hall over there. You know the gables at the hall there? You ask Ajahn Bambali, he saw this. Just, did he? Oh, someone's, anyway. Gradle was in the photographs. These gables, you know, the very high gable at the front of that hall, there was no roof on it, so there's no timber. It was just a big triangle going up, and there was a few more bricks I had to lay. So there's no scaffold at that time. Just all I did was get on the plate that's about 3 meters high, and then because the gable was actually stepped, I just walked right up to the top of the gable. Absolutely stupid. One bucket, I had a bucket of cement and my trowel. The other, the bricks necessary. Walking up there, you know, you'd have just had a heart attack if you'd seen me do things like that. That was totally against health and safety. Health and safety, they would have had a heart attack. It'd be actually bad for their health even to come and check me out when I was doing stuff like that. And because, you know, the wall was wobbly, it hadn't settled, nothing to support it. I just, you know, very carefully laid those last bricks and then came down again. That was actually madness. But, you know, he did it because he had lots of confidence and faith. So that's something which is inspiring. And that's just how things work. Just prayers work. I was praying there for sure. Asaya's psychic power from the giants is mind over matter, real when mind is still. Oh, yeah, when the mind is still, it's got power. It's got oomph. Real power. And that has rule. People feel it. My girlfriend has experienced a bit of trauma in her life, including childhood trauma and trauma for sexual assault. Are you able to provide a story from the experience of how someone has healed from trauma through Buddhist practices? Thank you. Oh, yeah, I just mentioned this afternoon, but this is... Oh, you know, there's some stories which, you know, you start off and you spread them around and just where they end up, it just really inspires me. This is one of those which really sort of means a lot to me. And that's, you know, the simple story of opening the door of your heart. You know, it started off as just my father just saying, son, wherever whatever happens to you in your life, wherever you go, whatever you turn out like, please know that my house door will always be open to you. I'll never shut the door in your face. You're my son, that's enough. If that wasn't enough, you know, just actually to contemplate that unconditional love and acceptance. And it turned out when I recognized that was really important. I didn't fully understand. I was about 13, 14-year-old at the time. But I knew it was really precious. And I just kept it and just, especially when you're a monk, just really focused and contemplated on what the heck did that mean. And it wasn't his house, it was his heart. It was totally open to me. I didn't need to fulfill any promises or to make him proud. No matter what happened, I was his son, and he'd give me this total unconditional love. And I started realizing that's a wonderful way of describing metta, unconditional loving kindness, peace, acceptance. It is letting go of control, allowing people into your life. They're not perfect, then neither am I. And that was the most important. You didn't have to be perfect to actually to have your father's love. He was giving it for free, with no conditions. And then I developed that, as you all know, and that was the time when people sometimes come up and they invite me to this, invite me to that, and what they invited me to was this group called ASSETS, Australian Society of Survivors of Torture and Trauma. I got a place, I think in Stirling Street or Beaufort Street, somewhere around there. And they invited me there, and I didn't know why. And they said, oh, because, you know, it's a couple of your stories we've using without your permission. Of course you've got permission if it works. And we want to say thank you. And the story they used was the opening the door of your heart. And in a way which I never expected, and just how amazingly powerful it was. Because these were dealing with people who'd come from some of the worst parts of the world, who were tortured, multiple rapes, beaten, incarcerated for months or years. And when some of them told those stories, what they'd been through, first of all, you feel ashamed that one human being could treat another like that. And you feel in awe that they could survive that. But only physically. Because when they were alone, sleep at night, or not really sleeping, just they were still in those underground cells somewhere in the world, not knowing when the next will be tortured or beaten or electrocuted or killed. Not killed, obviously, they thought they might be. Sometimes they thought that might be the best option. And they were still not totally free. Physically, yes, emotionally, not. And this group of psychologists used this opening the door of your heart simile, and it was very successful. And all they did, when the person felt safe, safety is important, you can't force these things. Just like meditation, you try and make people feel comfortable and safe here. You're not going to get criticized. You know, you're not going to have to say, oh, now you've got to go to bed now because you've got to get up in the morning. Whenever you want to sleep, and you feel like, you know, that you are protected and cared for in this place, I hope. You've got the teddy bears for. So, when you feel safe and you're ready, you close your eyes and you imagine this heart in your chest, Valentine's Day heart, as I often say, because you know, I've seen real hearts, and just they're just pretty ugly, actually. Tubes here and a tube there, and it's not even balanced. It's just so really the Valentine's Day heart, so simple, and it's actually you know, quite beautiful. So imagine this Valentine's heart in your chest, and you imagine two big doors, like the two big doors here, two big doors behind me, opening out. You're opening the door of your heart, and there, standing inside, looking out, is that part of you you're comfortable with. The part of you which is happy, healthy, peaceful. The part of you which was not abused or hurt. The part of you it's easy to let into your heart. The healthy one. Where you realize that you've suppressed, rejected, pushed out a lot of those little yous who were hurt so meaninglessly, so sadistically, so terribly. And you look down, you see them outside on the ground. These little girls were so badly treated. The boy who was beaten, couldn't understand why. The people who were tortured. The young woman who was underage, raped and raped and raped. Those are parts of you. You see them outside. And for all those years you've been trying to forget them, trying to get rid of them, trying to push them out, trying to find a place where they can't find you because just looking at them is so painful. But now, from your heart, you imagine a staircase going down. And that staircase reaches the ground. And then you invite all those little yous, the person that you never did anything wrong, but you're ashamed of. It's weird, our psychology, that we're afraid of. Though even just remembering them just causes us anxiety and pain. Every one of those you've kept out of your heart for such a long time, you invite to come up those stairs. Come up. I know it's scary, it's frightening, I just wish you could vanish and disappear, but you can't, you're part of me. And both of you, when you get to the top, you embrace. Come in to my heart. You're who I am. You're part of me. And every one of these little traumatized, hurt, beaten, wounded, misunderstood parts of you, come up. The door of my heart is open to you, no matter who you are. Unconditionally, come in. I never thought that it could be used like that, but when it is, huge catharsis, a change. Because one of the biggest problems is rejection. Never happened. Trying to find a place where you can't remember these things anymore. But they keep following you, wanting to come in. When they do come in, you allow them in. There's solution. People are free. That's who I am. And it doesn't hurt anymore once it's come inside. And it's amazing to see people who've been there and experienced this. And trying to get rid of it, trying to get some trick so it's not there anymore, that makes it worse. You have to welcome the monsters in your palace. Come in, you're part of me, you belong. Then they just shrink. The ugliness, the fear goes. So, that's powerful stuff. Anyway, I would be grateful for your comments on this. Whenever I sat, breath and nimitta visited a lot today. This sense of peace, very nice, but very quietly and frequently, thoughts and stories ran their automatic tapes. It felt as if my mind wanted the comfort of the more familiar,
though unpleasant thinking, associated you with breath and nimitta helped a bit. Thank you. So don't rush. Little by little, just if the thoughts come up, let them be. But just don't engage so much in the thoughts. The simile there was going through Singapore Airport. I don't know, so many times I go through there. And in Terminal 3, when you're changing the gates from A to B, that you go past the sports lounge. And you've got this huge TV monitor, and they're always playing English soccer. And you see all these people there, men, they're sitting down there, and every now and again they jump up and they shout and scream at this huge screen. That wasn't offside, that was... Because they get totally entangled and pulled in to what's happening. So much so that it doesn't matter how much they scream at the referee. They are in Singapore and a game is happening in Manchester. You cannot be heard that far away through screaming, and even more so, the game was finished the previous day. This is just a replay, highlights. Have you seen that happening? Maybe your husband's watching the cricket. That wasn't a wicket, that was LBW or whatever. Look, it doesn't matter, even if the match is being held in Perth somewhere. If you're watching the TV in Serpentine, they can't hear you. So why do you actually shout and get emotionally entangled? I often wondered that, and it was because if you're watching a sports match, you get sucked in and you actually feel psychologically you're actually there in the ground watching live. Same with movies. You think they're actually there. That's why it happens so many times. I mentioned the horror movie. That's at Monastery today, talking about horror movies. I don't know why monks talk about horror movies, but anyway, the horror movie I remember when I was a student was Tarantula. It was involved in a nuclear accident, and it's a big tarantula. And then the monsters, maybe this is what I remember, maybe it's not true, but I remember at the time the monsters, when I was a young man, they would only attack the beautiful women, the young ones. If you're old and fat, they wouldn't be bothered with you. So there's many advantages of being old and fat. Monsters, zombies, they're not worried about you. And the guys who protect the beautiful girls, they get attacked too by. But anyway, so Tarantula was creeping up on this beautiful young girl who was one of the heroes of the movie. And of course, you know, people get really excited. And what some of the guys in the back of the movie theater shouted out, "Hey, tarantula's behind you." Have you ever had that happen in the movie? People don't go to it, they watch it on internet these days, don't they? It's a shame, because when you're actually in the movie theater, it's like everybody gets involved. But anyway, so why do people do that? They get dragged into the action. And that's why thoughts and fantasies. If you get entangled, drawn in, it's like watching a movie, it's like watching a soccer match. To you it becomes so real that you get emotionally excited, entangled, and it becomes something you can't let go of. Go see what happens in the end. There was I shouldn't tell you who. There was one anagaric who said he wanted to put off his ordination until he could watch the final episode of Harry Potter. Once the final episode was over, then he'd ordain. Because once he'd become a novice on mic, he couldn't watch it. It's only a movie. You know, the hero always wins in the end. But only at the last moment. And only just. It'd always been like that. So anyway, this is the... why thoughts come in and stories come in and you get entangled. If you can just stand back and watch them from a distance, they don't have any power over you, but let them come, and then after a while they get boring. So you go back to the breath, which is much more interesting. Anyway, fear is associated with having a big ego, so trying to meet one's own expectations and not of others makes one feel tight. Sure it does. Absolutely. Learning to accept one's defilements and to continue on this path can be challenging at times. Can you please talk to this? Exactly. What are you trying to prove? What is an arahat, fully enlightened being? Would you recognize one if you saw one? What fantasies do we have about real enlightened beings? Do they have to be monks? Do they have to be fat and jolly? Or could they be the monk sitting next to me? Could they be the nuns over there? The quiet one sitting in the corner? Who knows? Because if you become enlightened, you don't sort of, you know, have a badge or medal on you, you know, to prove. You don't have a certificate on your wall like you have, you've got a degree or if you're a dentist or something. You know, this qualifies you as an arahat. Approved by the College of Arahats of Australia. We don't have those sorts of stuff. Is you disappear. That's why it's so hard to know who is the enlightened beings and who's not. Because you disappear, you vanish, and so no one knows. So anyway, expectations. Who's judging you anyway? You're judging you, that's who. You want to, your ego, your sense of self, wants to achieve things. That is what the ego is made of. Your achievements, who you think you are, all the great stuff you've done. That's who I am. What was that story of Nasruddin? After the retreat he had with his students, just to give them just a bit of a reward for all their hard work, he took them to the fair, had a fair come into town. This was many years ago, centuries ago actually. So he went to the fair and there was like the archery stall. If you could get a bullseye, you'd win a teddy bear or some other prize. Like in the old fairs and like the royal shows, I think they have these days. And so, this Nasruddin, he paid a few cents or dollars and got 3 arrows. And if he could get the bullseye, he'd win the prize. And because he was an important member of the community, and they thought, wow, we never knew you could shoot arrows. And they soon found out he can't. Because the first arrow he shot, it just never even made it to the target. It was only fell halfway. And I thought, this man is a fool. You know, this is a really important figure in the community making an idiot of himself. So people wanted to laugh, but they suppressed their laughter. And the students said, let's get out of here. You know, give up now. You're making us embarrassed. And he turned to his students and he said, that was the shot of a hasty man. And he put his second bow arrow in the bow, shot that. He took much more time, so he pulled it further back. And it made the distance, but it went sort of about a mile to the right, almost killed somebody. And they were really laughing at him. This foolish religious person who think he could actually shoot bows and arrows is totally out of his league. And they said, come on, let's get out of here, stop now. He said, no, that was a shot of a proud man. And then he had one more shot, and they were just really worried that how embarrassed all his students were. And everybody was watching by now and sniggering. And this time he pulled the arrow back, he shot the arrow, and it went right into the center of the bullseye. And as he was collecting his prize, his students were relieved that they weren't embarrassed. The people were stunned. And they had to ask, well, if the first shot was of a hasty man, the second shot was a shot of a proud man, what was that third shot? He said, oh, that was me. You heard the one before, you didn't laugh. Okay, anyway. I thought that was funny. What it really means is your sense of ego and expectations. When you have no expectations, it doesn't matter. If you miss, you miss. If you hit, you hit. But you're not worried about it. So, what is the funniest question you've ever been asked? What is the funniest questions you've ever been asked? That's a hard one. If I remember any funny questions I've been asked? It was like why I became a monk. And that was because of a broken heart. I became a monk to forget. To forget the pain of a failed relationship. And that's, because I can't remember anything now, I don't think that was true. But that's consistent because it must have worked. I can't remember. It wasn't true at all. But what's the funniest question? What's the funniest question? Do you remember? Funny questions? Okay. Now, who have I been asked? I am in denial about them. I've deleted them from my memory. The funniest questions I've been asked. I think maybe. I'll leave that there, see if one can come up afterwards. How do we get rid of our spikes? Haircut, because I remember these punks had spikes in their hair, and that's where they got rid of their spikes. Just be kind, don't be afraid of people, afraid of yourself, don't worry what people think of you. Thanks for this morning's talk, I got some useful takeaways. Takeaways? We're only supposed to eat what Bianca serves for us. You had takeaway food. I thought I wondered, I saw this beep, 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 and I thought it was just the truck delivering the tanks. I didn't realize it was a pizza coming late at night, takeaway. Apparently they do deliver this far. We go out for takeaway. With the breath, is it okay we're needed to breathe out of the mouth instead of the nose? Yeah, why not? Kind of like a deep silent sigh to try and help reset or maybe a form of letting go, yeah. So you can breathe out wherever you want to. But if you're breathing out through, you know, your back end, that means you've got a bit of indigestion. So I always say that if you have indigestion and you pass wind, which is usually smelly, please make sure you sit in the back. Because if you sit in the front line, then there's so many more people behind you have to smell what comes out. So if you sit in the back, it's out of compassion. So only the wall smells you. So, of course, now you know why the people who are sitting in the back now always sit in the back. It's okay for us monks and nuns because, you know, we're sitting in the front, but the wall's right behind us. And why this monk is sitting that way because he wants to asphyxiate, can't you know? Okay. Anyway. Any chance to do photo session or selfie with no selfies. Haven't you heard we don't believe in a self. We don't do selfies. We do weefies. Us fees. Weefies. If you've got pictures of lawyers, any lawyers here? I can tell this joke then. If you're having a group picture of lawyers, how do you get them to smile? You say, fees. Oh, you're a lawyer. You're going to ring your lawyer and get me sued. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, sure, we can do that later on. But not now. Today, while sitting, my bodily feeling disappeared, and I felt absolute, totally overwhelming joy and ecstasy, more than I ever have before in meditation. Yay! I also sort of had brightness in my vision, but my internal comedy did not turn off, and only lasted a short bit. Was this a false nimitta? It was a nimitta, but because you didn't let go of your commentary enough, it was just unstable. But you got a taste. What is possible? Oh, beautiful nimittas. Oh, very nice. And don't disturb them with a commentary. Leave that till later on. Have you ever listened to classical music? Really beautiful music. Imagine you're listening into a concert hall, say the Royal Albert Hall, listening to this incredible, beautiful music. And suppose you made a commentary about it. You turned around to your friend and said, "Wow, that's amazing music today." You'd be thrown out. You'd be disturbing, you know, the music by your commentary. So when you're having a beautiful time, think it's just an amazing performance. So you don't disturb it. Then it lasts a long time. And the bliss. Ooh, ooh. Anyway, when I came out of it, my heart was pounding like mad, the excitement, like I'd just sprinted or been in a real panic. I think it's on the right track. But what do you think? Yeah, it's very, that's common. You're pounded because you're really excited. Now, these are big experiences. Sometimes I make jokes, but they are huge when you get to these nimittas and the jhanas. And they call it Uttari Manusa Dhamma. They're fantastic. And there's many things I can say about them, but you do get really amazing energy. You can do it. Just as I say, they're really big stuff. And if, I've mentioned this, that if you were a Christian and you get, say, the first jhana, they would make you a saint. Some people feel like that. The body is gone. The sense of self has disappeared. It's like, you know, you merge with God. Amazing experience. Blissed out. And great healings happen afterwards. Sometimes psychic powers happen. And so that people like St. Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, when they had those experiences, first jhana, it looks like, I'm not convinced because totally, but it sounds like it. But of course, they made them saints because of that. So if Kanchana had the first, it should be called Saint Kanchana of Mandijong. So just you're really missing out. So anyway, but it doesn't matter because not in here to become saints. But that's how powerful it is. It's brilliant stuff. Anyway, so expect to be a bit excited. But if you do get excited the next time, make the resolution. When these beautiful lights and bliss comes up, I will remain calm. Self-hypnosis, conditioning, auto-conditioning, programming, mindfulness, I usually call it. Put the instructions in there first of all. So when these things start to happen, you remember, just be calm. And then you don't get so excited, you can go deeper. You mentioned yesterday that chakra probably could create by the mind. So is aura also created by the mind? Yeah. At one of the retreat, a woman came and sat next to me and I started feeling incredibly uncomfortable. Soon we started to chant Metta Sutra and I was okay. I've heard that energy or aura around people not only see, we can feel too, I guess, similar to the long spike story. Yes. Sometimes, oh, is it your brother, Venerable Dhammabhutta? I think he told me once that that's Little Gotami's brother, who's a monk over in Malaysia, that when he, I think he was in a house and the public executioner of Malaysia came in the house. He was the guy who pulls the lever when people get hung. And he didn't know who this guy was, but straight away he felt, ooh, this, you know, he felt there was something really bad about this, very uncomfortable. And you can imagine why, you know, that fellow was really scary. So, yeah, people do have spikes and just they project those. Is it possible to purchase your books from here? Who should I contact? As I'll be leaving Perth on Sunday, I won't make it to the City Centre Library. Oh, you can contact Mr. Amazon. Well, I think actually we do have some books, I think, here that you can purchase, I think. I'm not sure. I don't know, anyway. So anyway, that's not my job. I just write the books. I'm just a slave. I don't get anything out of this. So maybe you can ask Bianca the last day or whatever. Do we have any of the books here, Abby? I don't know. Oh, it reminds me, actually, I'm supposed to write your cookbook. I've got a cookbook she's making for Newby Buddhist Monastery. And I just got to sort of write a few quotes for it. I got the first quote. That's similar to what's on the the war there, it's the beginning. So I say, if you are what you eat, all squirrels are nuts. If you are what you eat, all squirrels are nuts. Okay, well, this is going to be in the book anyway. You maybe delete it and I can try again. Evening, Ajahn. Evening, chaps. No, I would say that was what was his name? Dixon of Dock Green. This was the police movies when I was young. There's no blood. And he would say, evening all, in the beginning. And if he arrested anybody, this was written in the old days, so arresting Kanchana for whatever, and then Kanchana would say, oh, you're Dixon of Dock Green. It's an honour to be arrested by the famous of Dixon of Dock Green. You know, they don't make criminals like that these days. Because they don't make police like that these days. That was a really crazy series. Anyway, it was really fun, though. Evening, Ajahn. Have you heard of Narcissus? People who at first seem charming and generous and hide their spikes, but then use this as a disguise to bring others down and manipulate them emotionally, make them dependent. Could you advise on them? What might cause this? What might cure them? And how to relate to them in a healthy way? There are not narcissists, but there are people who exhibit narcissism. There are not depressed people, but there are people who exhibit depression. There's not crazy people, there's people who have moments of craziness. So sometimes, if a person is diagnosed as something, often they live up to that diagnosis and they become that person. Be careful. That is, in Open the Door of Your Heart, the story of the Class B children. It was an experiment which I read when I was preparing to be a school teacher. I'm not doing well. Okay, anyway. Two classes of children in UK. Same year, did an exam at the end of the year, and they never published the results. They just split the children up equally into two classes. The child who came first went in the same class as the child who came fourth and fifth, eighth and ninth, 12th and 13th. The child who came second and third went in the same class as sixth and seventh, 10th and 11th, 14th and 15th. Split them up evenly. It's only the principal and two psychologists were in on the experiment. Chose teachers they thought were equally competent, classrooms with equal facilities, everything equal, except they called one class A and one class B. They were equal in ability based on that test at the end of the year. One class A, one class B. The people in class A assumed they were the best. They were the A class. And they went home with their results. Daddy, I'm in class A next year. How did you manage that? Well done, son. I thought you were lazy and hopeless, but when it counted, you did it. Well done. And kids who were in class B, they may come only second, but they're put in the B class. You work harder next year, daughter. No going out or no other things for you. You're grounded, you have to work harder. Because they all assumed that A were the successes, B were the failures. And even the teachers who went into the class thought, oh, this is only class B, don't have to teach at such a high level. Class A, they expected and anticipated more out of them. And even the kids felt like that. 1 year later, gave them the end of the year exam, and the children who thought they were class A were taught as if they were class A, believed they were class A, performed as you would expect class A children would. They literally became the better class. And the children in class B, because they were called class B, they believed they were class B, their parents thought they were class B, they did so poorly. You became what you were labelled. I often say that if you are in a partnership, if you call your partner stupid, you become stupid. If you call your wife selfish, she becomes selfish. If you know, I'm really going to go in controversial territory. If you call your friend or your son schizophrenic, he becomes schizophrenic. Your labeling puts people in a box and they begin to grow into that box. Now that is scary stuff, but it also shows us how we can get out of those boxes. There's no such thing as Class A kids, Class B kids. But we believe that. Narcissists. We make these boxes and we believe them. They're just approximations. Uh-oh. Oh, double-sided, my goodness. Thank you for spending your time on conditioning us and for healing us with so much metta. I was once told by a monastic in my country that since we are approximately 2,560 years away from the Buddha's time, really, are you sure? Have you counted it? There's many different opinions and calculations about how long ago the Buddha passed away. Though we are beings leftovers with very little merit. Oh, come on. Also, since lifestyles are complex, and the atmosphere is noisy, etc., that a sukha-filled way of four jhanas and insight may not work for us. How do you know? Disprove it, challenge it, rebel. And get jhanas. People do get jhanas. Full of sukha, and it's a way to enlightenment. Oh my goodness, rather than sukha-less method of dry vipassana is what it's like to work for beings in this area. That is solid gold gomayang. Actually, not gold. Solid brown gomayang. Stinky stuff. That is absolutely not true. A sutta was, was from Anguttara Nikaya was mentioned. Samma preceded by vipassana, or vipassana preceded by samutta, or samutta vipassana together. Or just the five hindrances are overcome. The three lower fetters, it is five hindrances that the farmers overcome just by sometimes inspiration, listen to the Dhamma. But there's no just vipassana by itself. It's vipassana and samatha or both together. This is how Ajahn Chah would say. Now you see the front of my hand. Now you see the back of my hand. You only see the back of my hand, but my front of my hand is right behind. Now you see both the front and the back together, sort of. He said, that's samatha vipassana together. That's samatha leading vipassana. That's vipassana leading samatha. But he can't divide them. He can't separate them. Where is samatha leads vipassana? There's no such thing as dry vipassana anywhere in the teachings of the Buddha. That comes from commentaries. Doesn't make any sense. So anyway, this is an excuse for not actually meditating and actually getting into deep meditation and letting go. So, follow the teachings of the Buddha, not the teachings of monks, not even me, not teachings of nuns. Check it out for yourself. This is not a question, just a request, only if time permits. Can you please share the story of the time when you think you got enlightened for a good laugh? Oh, I was embarrassed. Okay, we haven't got the time now, but maybe tomorrow. In answer to your question last night, no, I would not let you die from heart attack. I would get the AED from the dining hall and use it and call the ambos. What if I was in my room at night time, in my cave? By the time you open the door, I'll be and how do you know I'm dying anyway from a heart attack? Yeah, I could be just in the deep meditations in the jhanas. And I get very, very peaceful. And you put this booming defibrillator on me. Imagine that happened to the Buddha, under the Bodhi tree, getting very peaceful, the breath disappearing, and there was a defibrillator right there. There'd be no Buddha left. So no, we've got the defibrillator here, I'm going to use that for for my interrogations, for my interviews. I'm getting too many interviews, so be wary. If you have more than three interviews, I get the defibrillator out and find out what you're really up to. I don't do things like that. Maybe. No, of course I don't. In answer to that's right. I get a beautiful light sometimes when I sit. This is of different colours, and most of the time the colour changes, and the light is not stable and keeps flickering. This light comes when I can't feel my body except one point, just below my chest and above my belly. It doesn't feel like the body part, but kind of a tight feeling around there. The breath is very subtle at this point, and I could hardly feel it at times, but sometimes the breath comes up again, and after a few breaths, it disappears. When this happens, my attention goes to both light and breath. Why does it happen like that? Is it normal way that it happens? Of course it's normal. Because sometimes the light is coming up, so the mind is becoming very powerful, the breath and other stuff is being subdued. It's not that strong, but your mind is really strong because you're not doing very much, you're getting inspired and happy. Which means that sometimes when a nimitta comes up and light comes up, it doesn't mean that the five senses are totally gone. But as the light, the nimitta gets stronger and stronger and more powerful, it is almost like a moon coming up, a full moon coming up, and you can't see the stars. Because the stars are like the five senses, and the moon is like the sixth sense, the nimitta gets so bright that sort of it overpowers the intensity of the five senses. So those are things which happen. So don't do anything, just let it happen and see how it goes. And little by little, when you don't disturb anything, you stay still, your mind gets more energy, not like the moon, now it's like the sun. When the sun is out there, you can hardly see the moon, let alone stars. And one thing always to remember, because most of the nimittas are the visual nimittas, don't ever think that, wow, you're going to go blind because the nimitta is so bright. It's not seen with your eyes, it's seen with your mind, so it can be as bright as you like and you never go blind. It's not the reason why meditators wear glasses. That's some other reason. Dear Ajahn, there was a situation whereby I saw myself turning my head in slow motion, even though I had no intention of doing so. Is there a dharmic reason to be learned about this? Yeah, you are turning around in slow motion, maybe some healing, just the body wanted to do that, so just let it happen. I don't know why I was turning around, but if it actually goes all the way around... Now that's really cool, because apparently that happened in the Exorcist movie. So if you can do that, you get a bit worried. But it doesn't go all the way around. Now I'm trying to overcome inner commentary, second stage silent awareness of the present moment. So I'm watching every moment closely for having no time to comment, and it's very effective with silence, peace, nearly zero commentary. Yay! I'm watching every moment closely, like Vipassana, watching the most powerful perception without inner commentary. Is it okay? Yeah, why not? And a big sound, doesn't close sound, etc. Is okay? Yeah, it's okay. After fully developing silence, can I watch one thing, the breath? Yeah, whatever. Why do you want to ask me that? Can't you find out for yourself what happens? When you follow that, do you get more peaceful? Do you get more still? Does it feel right? Because sometimes you know it's right. It feels good. You're peaceful, you're calm, you can enjoy coming up. And so, follow your own insight. You know it's going in the right direction. But sometimes, because we doubt ourselves, sometimes you want some expert to tell you. But it actually is quite okay. So can I ask, when does a monk retire from his position? If I knew that, I wouldn't be here. Is it his choice, or is there a higher authority who decides that it's time to take it easy? Oh my goodness, there is no higher authority. I think it's when you get tired of my jokes, then you actually put me out to pasture somewhere. Send me away to an old monk's home. What do you do with old monks and old nuns? Where do they go? What do they say? I think it was General MacArthur. Old soldiers don't die, they fade away. It comes to monks. Old monks, they fade away. Old nuns, they just vanish. Maybe. Anyway, I'm not old enough yet. How old am I anyway? Does anyone know how old I really am? No, almost a bit more than that. Because at the New Year's Eve, I'm 809 now. Months. Isn't it more impressive if I just said, 67? That's nothing. So many people are 67. When you say you're 809, isn't that cool? The monk who celebrated his 809th birthday. Why does it have to be in years? So let's be different. Think outside the box. Months. Same as when people make donations to the Albany Monastery. Said, how much are you donating? And you say, I'm donating 10,000. Wow! That's amazing. You're so generous. 10,000. Indonesian rupiah. Which is about a dollar, isn't it? So make it impressive. Also, if a monk has gone off the rails and is behaving badly, who will step in to remedy the situation? Are you accountable to someone on earth who is your guiding teacher? Nah. So if a monk has gone off the rails, what do we do with them? We have these secret huts in the forest, which no one knows about, where we put all the mad monks. Actually, it's not in the forest, it's actually in the Parliament House. We put all of them in Canberra. No, just usually just to make sure the monks are looked after and are okay. Lastly, is it possible to experience jhana while eating a frozen yogurt popsicle? No, because jhana has to be accompanied with piti sukha, and I don't like frozen yogurt popsicles. If it was a cup of tea with condensed milk, maybe. Sri Lankan tea with tin kiri. No, it's because jhana is the way you don't have any of the, the five senses. At lunch today, my mind, mouth and brain just exploded. Did Bianca clean it up afterwards? Brain all over the place. Well, you don't need it, we've got too much brain. You're so lucky, so you don't have to think anymore. Exploded in a good way, and I experienced a feeling of sublime joy in being connected with the whole universe. Oh, if only it was so simple, just frozen yogurt popsicles. Just after one bite of a strawberry-flavoured frozen yoghurt popsicle. You should actually go on the TV and advertise these things. How to get enlightened the fast way. Frozen yoghurt popsicles. Actually, can we get these buy them up so that we can make a lot of money that way for the Buddhist Society of West Australia, even the Albany. The Albany frozen yogurt popsicles fundraising. Enlightened quickly. I had the insight today that my whole life was a Schrodinger's equation full of infinite possibilities. What was the other question we had about what you do when monks go off the rails? I can see a connection there between the two of those. Okay, that's enough. Sadhu! 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 Okay, that's all the questions today. I didn't really do the one about Can you please share a time when you think you got enlightened? But anyway, another day for that one. Okay, have a wonderful night's sleep if you want to, but you don't have to. It's up to you. The door of your cottage is open to you. And your poor pillows are missing you. So have a nice evening. See you in the morning. And thank you for the questions. Sorry?
Popsicles.
Oh, crikey. Do I get nightmares tonight? Good question, though. Well, those are fun ones to end the day.